C1F. Number 4A.
Now we come to the subtone of truth, and there I have written that material sensations cannot testify to the truth of man, whereas as man spiritually understands, so is he in truth. What he is showing here is this, that the sensations of the body seem to tell us how much of a man we are, if we are happy or if we are pained, if we are healthy or if we are sick, that the sensations tell us about the status of man. Now, this would be relying on the standpoint of material sense to tell us what we are. Now, in this chapter, in the Footsteps of Truth, he shows that our standpoint to have that mind, which is God, that is our mind, and therefore only that which the divine mind tells us is true about men. This naturally is a complete revolution in the world, because the world believes that which a man thinketh, that is what he is. And she takes here that rendering, as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Now this is not true. This is just not true. A man is not that what he thinketh in his heart. If a man thinks in his heart that he is envious and wants to kill everybody which he doesn't like, and thinks that the problem can be solved by shooting, well, that's not man. And so Mrs. Eddy corrects it and says, as a man spiritually understandeth, so is he in truth. We get to quiet the new concept of man in general, about us, about the other man, about man as such, namely that man is only that which we know from the standpoint of spirit. That's the only man we know. From now on, we know no other man but the man of spirit. Again, we see that spirit is always that which asks us to change our point of observation. If we look at man from the point of observation of our physical senses, we can only see a chaotic universe, a fallen man, a rotten man, and a rotten mankind, and a rotten humanity, and a rotten society. If we change the standpoint to the one spirit which only sees its own ideas, knows nothing but its own ideas, the whole universe changes. It's a universe that is immortal, and in that universe we have the man of spirit. The man of spirit, no more the man of our sensations. Again, you see, I feel that this is solving so many things in one hit. How do you say? In one go, you see. Instead of seeing everybody aright, instead of that, seeing that spirit, who is only one spirit, can only see its own likeness. And we not even need to call that man. We just can call it spirit's own likeness. And then we have solved all the problems about those 3 million billions of mortals running around on this earth. You may feel that this is, having one's head in the cloud and not standing on earth. It isn't. It's practical. Or do you think it's more practical to read the papers and what's going on in the world and have all our thoughts filled with neighbors who hate us and with bosses and employees who don't do the job and and who are not just and so on, and nations who fight each other. Do you think that's practical? Is that life practice? He says the life practice is when the unity of God and man must be wrought out in life practice. So the unity of God and man here is to see that spirit is the only standpoint, and that sees only one universe, and that's the most practical universe there is, a universe of ideas. Because these ideas are working changes, and they are working changes in their way, at their time, in their right time, and using those channels which are adapted to the situation. But the idea works. And then in the last, we have spirit as love, showing that these spiritual facts existing apart from material conceptions are self-existing. Here we have that well-known statement that God, good, is self-existent and self-expressed. I know it is a sentence which is very near to Laurie Sinton's heart, and it's become very near to my heart too. It's a tremendous statement. I remember how 20 years ago he was telling me that, and little by little I begin to see the tremendous import of it, to see that spirit is not only self-existent, but self-expressed. See, this is life practice. This is practical, operative Christianity. To see that one doesn't have to practice spiritual ideas, but that spirit, good, is self-existent, self-expressed, and to let it happen, and to trust that it happens, and to see how it happens, and to see that it happens infinitely, and to see that it happens infinitely in an omnipotent way, in an omniscient way, in an omnipresent way, and in an omniactive way. That's practice, to my sense. To my sense, nothing is practical if I have to take God and put it into a material situation. Practice is when a principle is operating. That is practical. Not when I have to make a principle operate. God never listens to my commands. What a pity, huh? I can tell dear God Almighty all sorts of things what he should do and how I would like him to do it, and he just doesn't do it. Completely disobedient. Completely. So I have to use another practice. And that's the practice of self-existent, self-expressed. Naturally, after what we have been hearing all through the winter, seeing those four levels and seeing how they operate, we have some faint gleams of what self-operation, self-expression really means in its infinite meanings. So that whole chart really can be summed up in a way as showing that it is a being which is by itself. I don't have to create it, nor to establish it, nor to make it. And it is a being that operates by itself. I don't have to give advice to it, nor beg it, nor to make it work, nor to make it go. I have not to wind up that clock so that it runs. Automatic. It works by itself. And the only thing I'm longing to is to be still enough, to be quiet enough, to feel it, not only to understand it, feel it. And one can feel it in a spiritual way. And it's a feeling that is so powerful and so overturning in its nature that one just has a sense which says, let it happen. And then one gets some kind of peace. Yes. So this was that second big picture of spirit. And we could see what is in this second picture, the divinity, what is the humanity. Because it is the humanity of divinity which is presented here. Here it's presented that the divinity is the understanding of spirit itself. And that understanding isn't something that stands by itself, but is brought out in life practice as the humanity of the reality of man, of spiritual man. So, whenever we would like to work out the question that man is spiritual and to find out the reality of man, the best thing is not to start that way, but to start with an understanding of spirit. How can we start with an understanding of spirit? We have further to go back to that big question of mind, that we have no other mind but that mind which is God. And that mind which is God is my mind. If I have that mind, then as spirit I have the source, the cause of all good. And the question, where does evil come from, is not asked. Then I have the cause, from there all good comes. And these are the only facts of reality, spirit to spirit. And these facts, which are presented then from that standpoint, have changed, translated my universe of material sense testimony into a spiritual universe. It has translated it so. And that's the only proof I have of the workings of the divine principle. And this gives me a sense of the immortality of the evolution of life. So that what is called material evolution is retrogression into nothingness. It's the lifting away of matter, the lifting off of the restraints which are put on spirit. And this is the only man that there is. Only what we understand spiritually is really man. And this is something which I don't have to put into operation, but something which is of the nature of love, which says, I am what I am, I'm self-existent, and I operate the way I operate, that's self-expressed. And that's the music of the sphere, really. All right. Let's take another subject. So, I think I can take this one a bit quicker. You laugh, but you know me. Here, I've tried to epitomize it as this. The senses of soul testify to the immortal identity of man, which cannot be lost. Here is the great, great question under which mankind struggles. Can we retain immortality? What can we do not to lose our identity? Here the answer is that the divinity is the immortality of soul. And from the immortality of soul comes the humanity of man, namely the immortality of man. So that the divinity of soul is made manifest as the humanity of soul in the immortal identity of man. You see here again, actually we must fall back on what she has been explaining up to now, that all is a matter of standpoint. That in the measure as we take the point of view of observation, which is God as the only right point of view of observation, from which we divinely subjective look at being, then I have taken the immortal standpoint, and from an immortal standpoint I can only perceive an immortal man. But that immortal man looks a bit different than a mortal. Humanity would like to make a mortal immortal. And that's not possible. It tries naturally, through biology, to extend life. I've just been reading a new book on the biology, and they say that it should be absolutely feasible that within the next 50 years or so, that the average life expectancy of men should be about 150 years. Well, why not? I mean, the life expectancy has doubled in the last 100 years. As far as I can remember from my university studies, in the middle of last century, the average expectancy of life was 37 years. Today, I think it's 70 or 75. It has more or less doubled within 100 years. So one doesn't see why it should not be possible, especially through the new investigation in biology, to extend that average life expectancy to 150 years. Why not? So what? What is easier, or what is better, to work out the idea of immortality after 70 years or after 150 years? The problem is the same. Jesus didn't try to solve it after 150 years nor after 70 years, but after 30 years. The problem is the same. No matter what our life expectancy is, the problem is a very different one than to extend biological life. We come back to what we have been seeing all afternoon, that the issue that is in front of our age is a mutation of consciousness. A mutation which is willing, instead of thinking from the mortal brain, to think out from the divine mind. That's the problem. That's what is urging itself on us. So it is a very different one than what physics and biology have in view. It is a metaphysical problem. I was very interested in one lecture by Buckminster Fuller, you know, that very well-known architect in America, that he said that the next century will be the century of metaphysics. He has a flair of what's coming, and in many ways I think he sees things straight. I wouldn't be surprised if he were or would be right. What is the right grammar? Were right. Huh? If he were right. Yes? All right. It's nice. You understand every language, even mine. So, here again, we see that we must go out from the divine mind. That's the first point. She says that divine mind transmits its impression through spiritual sense, not through material sense. See, now it's asked, but what sort of universe will we have and experience if we have taken that first step of mind and the second step of spirit? Then she says, all right, if you have made that change of standpoint, then now you see things through spiritual sense and no more through material sense. Just as a good musician may hear a new melody, not through physical, through material sense, but through his musical sense. And he gets the tunes which are not played, he gets them through a spiritual sense. And in the same way, the prophets of old got the new visions through spiritual sense. If the world today only believes that all impressions should reach us through material sense, it's just a fact, it's just a method of education, which is more or less unique to our scientific age, but which in earlier time was not so pronounced in the general, in the mentality of mankind in general. They were much more used to spiritual intuition and to spiritual sense than in this material age. But this does not exclude that we rediscover the faculty of using spiritual sense instead of material sense. If it has just been covered up for a few centuries, it doesn't mean that it is not there. And the beauty of it is that the moment one begins to rely on spiritual sense and use spiritual sense, that somehow they become much more tangible to one's consciousness than material sense testimony. But this is something one can't explain to a material, to somebody who is materially minded. He wouldn't believe it. He said, well, that's not possible. It's something I can only experience. And each one that tries in a little way, and I haven't done it, but in a little way, to listen more to the spiritual, you begin to realize that the impressions one gets from the divine mind through revelation, through inspiration, through intuition, through feeling, true feeling, is much more comforting, much more assuring, much more certain to spiritual sense than are material impressions to material sense. Thank goodness that we have still artists who more or less have to rely on other than their five physical senses to produce art. To produce music. A musician, a composer, he has never heard materially the tunes that he is going to compose. He has heard them through his musical sense. And so is a sculptor, a painter, a modern painter especially, he has never seen the figures he paints. He has conceived them are through his sense of art, through his intuition, and then tried somehow to objectify it on the canvas or as a sculpture. And we who have been brought up more or less on the materially scientific basis have to rediscover that wonderful sense that we can work with spiritual sense instead of material sense. And she goes on and shows that this is really that which we should culture. As spirit, soul as spirit, she says that bowing down to matter is idolatry. It multiplies pain and would rob God. It just shows here that really if we try to get hold of reality through material sense, that we rob ourselves of the infinite, because material sense can only testify to the limited. So really, if we rely on just what the five physical senses testify to us, and say we only believe what the five physical senses tell us, what we are doing is that we rob ourselves of the infinite possibilities and of the infinite variety and of being. That's all what we do. We rob us. Whereas if we would use spiritual sense, then a spiritual sense is unlimited. We would really be able to go right into the unfathomable realm of mind. You see, that's, I think, what somehow lies behind LSD. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Yes. That's the drug they take, LSD.
Yeah.
Yes. It's the wrong antipode of what they are reaching out, the limitlessness, the infinite. And because they don't know how to get it through spiritual sense, always, as it has been in human history, the wrong sense has first come to the surface. Always. Because the wrong sense first has to be uncovered. But what they really long to is the infinite. That sense where inspiration comes in, where they can live by intuition. And so let's just see things as they are and not as they appear. Then soulless soul, I have to hurry on now. He says, the senses of soul with all its faculties can never be lost. That's a point which I have touched upon already by seeing. Though we have not cultured spiritual sense as we should have done, because the scientific age that has broken on Western mankind since about 500 years has more or less eliminated the culturing of spiritual sense, and has put all the weight on measuring and weighing on material sense. But because one has done that, that doesn't mean that it isn't there anymore. It's still there because it's a fact in reality. It belongs to men, that man has a faculty of conceiving spiritually. Then she goes on and shows that in the measure that we do that, then we have the proof of science, because then it reverses the testimony of the material senses.